Wow, hello and welcome to American Hit Radio on 90.3 WHPC. They're all pandemic. My gosh, we've done this entire series. We started this in about almost exactly a year ago in late December, around Christmas time, in I guess in 2019. And this is show number 53 in the series that we call Transistor Days. It's show number 54. So I think we squeezed in like one in 2019. And then we just continuously carried through all of 2020. And we are getting near the end. We're going to carry this through to 1969. That's where the series ends. It was to cover pop music from 1955 until 1969, what we call the Transistor Days. And we, from 55 until 68, as you can tell, has been quite a journey. It's taken us 53 hours of pop music to get this far. And it's been glorious fun.
It's been so much fun.
It's just a great, it's a great, easy series to do. Now, we covered the summer of 68, or late spring of 68, just last week. And as you can see here, the summer of 68 was distinctly different from the summer of 67, often referred to as the summer of love, obviously. Mm. By 1968, an unease had set in that started to affect the zeitgeist in profoundly negative ways.
Aww.
The inspiration and the elation that an entire generation experienced when discovering mind-altering substances, for example, suddenly grew darker, a bit more moody and threatening, like any habit that begins to turn into an addiction. It becomes less fun. The escalation of the war in Vietnam only heightened the paranoia, as did race riots, the assassinations of beloved heroes. Before the songs in this show were released, we lost both Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy.
Tragedies.
It was a stunning time politically and horrifying in just about every sense of the word. Usually the music conveys it, but there was something about 68 where you had to more or less read between the cracks in the pavement to get how the music was trying to convey that, because there was also a desperate need to hold on to a sense of happiness and belonging. I mean, we just came through the summer of love, for God's sake. We called it that for a reason. There was this overwhelming sense of ecstasy. And now, oh my gosh, talking about having the rug pulled out from under you, it was, you know, with so much going wrong, it's difficult to recollect how radio managed to even support pop music with such a breezy air of indifference. But almost every pop song from this tumultuous season seems to portray the same sense of optimism as the previous year. Or perhaps maybe it was simply escapism. Or maybe the media was just trying to distract from the political unrest. That was where we began to really understand what commercial AM radio was all about. And it's exactly the same time that not quite commercial FM radio started to come into like becoming a full force. So we are focusing on the AM side of things. So understand that. That's an important distinction to make with where we are and what was happening at the time. Now, our first song isn't one of my favorite songs ever. I mean, it came out, I'm 9 years old at this point in time. I remember the first time that I heard it, I was like my parents rented a cabin in New Hampshire, and I'm 9 years old, and my turtle froze to death. It got so cold at night. And we would listen to the AM radio. Again, listening to AM radio on the transistor radio.
It's a stronger signal.
In this cabin, it's what we could do. And they would often play this song called Angel of the Morning, which I just thought was a beautiful song by Marilee Rush and the Turnabouts. Now, I learned a lot about the song since those innocent days when I was 9 years old. For example, I didn't even know that the song was about a woman surrendering herself to a man without any necessary, any sense of obligation, just to try to make him feel like guilt-free. How 1967 of her. But I always have and always will find it fascinating that Angel of the Morning was written by the same man who wrote Wild Thing by the Troggs. How a songwriter could cover both the brainlessly Neanderthal, macho, cool stupidity of one song and the incredibly intelligent feminine vulnerability of the other is beyond me. But Chip Taylor did it. I mean, Wild Thing is an idiotic and brutish romp that sounds about, that it took about as long to compose it as it does to record it. It's entertaining because of its three-chord inanity and the mock cool performance of the band. But Angel of the Morning is everything that Wild Thing isn't. While the Troggs sound as though they're just stomped through somebody's flower garden, Merrily Rush sounds as though she is mentally preparing herself to let somebody else stomp through hers, metaphorically speaking.
Ho, ho.
Few songs before or since have so sensitively conveyed that awkward moment that is addressed in these lyrics. Pay attention and try to get the real true impact of Angel in the Morning by Merrily Rush on American Radio 90.3 WHPC.
Strings to bind your hands, not if my love can bind your heart. And there's no need to take a stand, for it was I who chose to start. I see no reason to take me home. I'm old enough to face the dawn. Just call me Angel of the Morning, Angel. Just touch my cheek before you leave me, baby. Just call me Angel of the Morning, Angel. Then slowly turn away from me. The sun's light will be dim, and it won't matter anyhow. If morning's echo says we've sinned, well, it was what I wanted now. And if we're victims of the night, I won't be blinded by the light. Just call me Angel of the Morning, Angel. Just touch my cheek before you leave me, baby. Just call me Angel.
That song could and still can make me weep. I feel so much sympathy for the female character in that song. This is exactly the time when free love starts to take reign. And you feel in that song how women are the ones who are victimized by it. Mm-hmm. They have to make the choice, and they're the ones who are going to end up in tears and willingly end up in tears as a result of what the times are basically offering them. It's an amazingly powerful song for 1968. And this next song is like equally interesting, although, I mean, not nearly as powerful emotionally. But this song was written in the spirit of 67 because it was recorded in 67.
Uh-huh.
That's what they were trying to convey. It's the ultimate hippie song about, again, maybe, you know, free love, or basically just being in love, you know, everybody be happy, reach out of the darkness, you know, and all of a sudden, two of the nation's heroes are murdered. The song went nowhere until after these two, like, slaughters, these two assassinations.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, the song took on this different meaning. And all of a sudden, Jim and Kathy Post had written a song that sounds like more important in 1968 than it sounded cool in 1967. It took on an added meaning, and it became a big hit as a result. On American Radio 90.3, they recorded as Friend and Lover, and here they are singing Reach Out of the Darkness.
Was so groovy.
Right? I mean, I know that sometimes we feel that we are a nation on the brink, but it would be really hard to top the feeling that you would have had in 67 and 68, especially if you were young, because everything, it was terrifying to see what was happening. It was changing so quickly. And here it is, AM radio, the most innocent of formats, that is offering us these little clues of hints.
Vignettes.
Here's a good example. A song that I really can't tell you too much about. It's by a band called Status Quo.
Oh.
Didn't mean anything to me at the time. I've learned later that the lyrics were inspired by the artist L.S. Lowry.
Oh.
Because he was a bit of a, what do you call it, like a folk artist sort of thing, a British folk artist. And that was unusual for the time.
Okay.
But the band Status Quo recorded a song called Gentleman Joe's Sidewalk Cafe, and this was its B-side, the typical example of flipping the hit. Now, on a personal level, I got to tell the story.
Okay, come
because
on.
It's 1968, I'm 9 years old, and I'm living through all of this craziness, and I think it was around the time that I had my appendix operation. And what matters is, like, I hear this record and it has this awesome wah-wah guitar, what I never heard before. I don't think I'd ever heard a wah-wah before with a flanging effect at the same time.
Wow.
So it was like, it was probably the coolest sounding song I'd heard up until that point in time. So I buy the single and I then go door to door and I...
I know what song this is.
And I knock on my neighbor's doors and I say, do you want to hear my band's new single? We just recorded this. Awesome. I mean, I was like a blatant liar, a total, like a charlatan. I'm 9. I mean, I guess they knew I was lying.
How many neighbors invited you in?
I remember having conversations. I mean, I really remember it probably for the shame of it, you know, of being such an amazing liar. But I remember about 4 houses. Maybe I think I distinctly remember about 3. And, you know, because they were the mothers of my friends and telling them that I was trying to get my friends to join a band with me. I wanted to form a band. And this was part of my recruiting tactic. Like, I'm in this awesome band and I want, you know, your sons, we're going to be in a band and we're going to be great. Exactly. You know, just, you know, listen to me. We'll be great. You know, here I is, you know, it is like 50 years later and I'm still doing the same thing. On American Radio 90.3 WHBC, here's Status Quo with Pictures of Matchstick Man. Yeah, man, that was me on drums at 9 years old.
Yeah.
No, that was pretty good. You know, it was easy. You know, 9 year old could do it. Wow. All right. Now, though, coming off of my pretension of pretending that was me, I want to play a great miss, a song that to this day I really kind of truly despise. You can argue with me about it. It's Eric Burdon and the Animals. But when hippiedom gets to the point where the song becomes like 7 minutes long and its point is so, so like transparently obvious, and it's artless. It's just artless. And I have a problem with this song. From the second I heard it the first time and all four times I was able to sit through it since then. You can make up your own mind, but here's Eric Burdon and the Animals performing Sky Pilot Parts 1 and 2. And I apologize. On American Radio 90.3 WHPC.
Sorry, not sorry.
He blesses the boys as they stand in line. The smell of gun grease and their bayonets, they shine. He's there to help them all that he can. To make them feel wanted, he's a good holy man. Tells them it's all right. He knows of their fear in the forthcoming fight. Soon there'll be blood and many will die. Mothers and fathers back home they will cry. With a smile, the order is given, they move down the line, but he's still behind and he'll meditate, but it won't stop the bleeding or ease the hate. As the young men move out into the battle zone, he feels good, with God you're never alone. He feels so tired and he lays on his bed. Hopes the man will find courage in the words that he said. We'll be right back.
We're soldiers of God, you must understand. The fate of your country is in your young hands. May God give you strength, do your job real well. If it all was worth it, only time it will tell. In the morning they return with tears in their eyes. The stench of death drifts up to the skies. A young soldier so ill looks at the sky pilot, remembers the words, "Thou shalt not kill."
I guess we could argue about that one for hours, but nothing will change my mind. I think when you take the hippie aesthetic and you apply it to something as obvious as the subject of that song, and you add in all of the unnecessary noise and production, and it doesn't even necessarily feel like it's a thematic song after a while, but it wastes 7 minutes of your time to try to make you believe in it. I gave up on it, and I ain't never looking back. Now, let's talk about a great miss that I can sink my teeth into. This is also what I consider to be a great miss. It's recorded by Herbert Boutros Khoury. That's his birth name. His mother was the daughter of a rabbi from Belarus. His father was the son of a Catholic priest from Lebanon. Whoa, that's already crazy, right? He had a passion since he was a child for records that were recorded from around 1900 to 1920. He would spend most of his youth going to the New York Public Library and studying the history of the phonograph industry. Oh. And when he saw a poster of Rudolph Valentino with long hair, it intrigued him so much that he decided to grow his own hair. And when he started to perform, he would wear pasty white makeup to resemble his heroes from 1900 to 1920, the way that they would in the old pre-talkies. His mother at this point thought that there was something wrong with him, and she... Now that he's in his 20s, she was taking him to a psychiatrist at Bellevue Hospital until his father stepped in and said, "Let him be. He has an upset." You know, he had a genuine obsession. Eventually, after performing for free for about 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years in the weirdest sense of circumstances, flea circuses and freak shows and such like that, he gets a TV spot on Rowan and Martin's Laughing.
Oh.
And he becomes a national superstar freak, being who he is. Nobody realized that he wasn't a comic invention. They didn't realize that he really was who he was in as he performed. Tiny Tim was real. He was not a fake. He discovered that weird falsetto. He believed in it. He loved the music that he was singing because he worshipped it his entire life. He had them memorized. He knew the charts, and he learned them on the ukulele that he played them on. He was honest as the day is long.
He lived it all the way to the end. He died of a heart attack right on stage.
You know, yes, it's a great miss because it's ridiculous, but it's also, in a sense, beautiful. On American Radio 90.3 WHPC, here's Tiny Tim performing Tiptoe Through the Tulips, his only top 40 hit song, surprisingly. Okay, man, there's two sides of great misses back to back there. That's for sure. Now for something completely different, if I may lift a line from Monty Python. Moving from Tiny Tim to Johnny Cash is about as different as you can get. But when Johnny Cash was in the Army, he wanted to write a song, and he had the idea for writing. He saw a movie called Inside the Walls of Folsom Prison, and it inspired him to want to write about something. So he started writing the song. And when he... which made him want it to basically write from the perspective of an inmate. And he wanted to explain why he was there. And he was like, what's the worst reason I could possibly be in prison? And it occurred to him that it would be because of, what if I killed somebody just because I wanted to watch them die? Hmm. It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's strange that that thought pattern would result in a hit single for him, or at least, but... You know, in 1955, which was when the original song was released, it started his career. Well, by 1968, he actually goes to Folsom Prison and he records an album there and he sings this song in front of the prisoners. You want to talk about a song suddenly taking on extra meaning? It's just hard to really convey the depth of this performance. But here is Johnny Cash from 1968 at Folsom Prison singing Folsom Prison Blues on American Radio 90.3 WHPC.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash. I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps a-rolling on down to San Antone. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. When I hear that whistle blowing, I hang my head and cry. I bet there's rich folks eating from a fancy dining car. They're probably drinking coffee and smoking big cigars. Well, I know I had it coming. I know I can't be free. But those people keep a moving, and that's what tortures me. If they freed me from this prison, if that railroad train was mine, I bet I'd move it on a little farther down the line. Far from Folsom Prison, that's where I want to stay. And I'd let that lonesome whistle blow my blues away.
Can't deny Johnny Cash. Stunning. Now, here's another song where I've got like a, I guess, a personal story, because I guess this, I must have been like an awakening was happening with me, I think, around the summer of 68. Felix Cavalieri and Eddie Brigati wrote this really great song about peace and love. Again, you know, a song that was probably inspired by the previous year. But in 68, it takes on an additional heaviness. Well, my parents in that summer, I remember this weekend so well, decided to go to Manhattan for a weekend, something that they would never, ever do again in their entire life. And they never did it before either. My dad kind of hated the city, but I think it was his way of saying, okay, we're gonna have a weekend to ourselves. So they dropped me off at my aunt's house. My aunt and uncle, Aunt Peggy and Uncle Walter. And I was just going to spend the weekend there. Big deal, you know, great, fine, whatever, would have been fine. Except for the fact that none of us knew that I had an appendix problem that started to get out of control right the very first night, Friday night. I had about 106 degree fever. I was living in the bathroom, and my poor Aunt Peggy was beside herself, didn't know what to do. Nobody took me to the hospital.
You didn't die.
I laid on the couch and I got up. I went from the couch to the bathroom, and I never even went to a bed ever. I would go from the couch to the bathroom. I mean, for the entire time. And, you know, her not ever having a son didn't know quite what to do about it. My parents came back on a Sunday, brought me home, called the doctor, and the doctor came home and said, "This boy's appendix has just burst. You get him to the hospital now or he's about to die." And the doctor saved my life, and everything was great. Everything ended perfectly fine. But I tell that story because when my parents came back from the city, they brought me a little gift. And what they did was they handed me "People Got to Be Free" by the Rascals. Oh. That was the single that they gave me. And I'll remember it for the rest of my life. And I still love the song. So on American Radio 90.3 WHBC, I know it's an absurd story, but this is how things work when you live through it. Here are the Rascals with "People Got to Be Free."
All the world on the sound, easy to see. People everywhere just want to be free. Listen, please, listen, that's the way it should be. Peace in the valley, people got to be free. Lovely world is to be.
'cause it's coming right on through.
Oh, the memories. All right. Although we may not have been aware of it at the time, the late 60s marked a period when music was the dominant force of our culture. Ahead of television, the movies, fashion, arts, sports, literature, it doesn't matter. This is a major reason why there is so much music from the 60s that retain their vital quality. A song was often much more than a rhythm and a melody. It was a key to a new way of thinking. To varying degrees, all other aspects of our culture took their cues from popular music, giving it a momentary power that has not existed since. Even politics was forced to kowtow to the force of popular music. John Lennon, Bob Dylan, Crosby, Stills and Nash, and Young, and others had developed political identities that rivaled their identities as performers, influencing young minds in ways that the established politicians never could. They were offering new solutions to old problems. Music held the key to an open-mindedness that for a while made us think that we really were different. Because of this, almost every famous recording artist from the 60s was political in one sense or the other. And that included Steppenwolf. Born to Be Wild was the theme song for the movie Easy Rider, which portrayed an alternative lifestyle, namely that of two dropouts on motorcycles, and packaged it for the mass market. For the most part, though, the music propelled the movie and made it a willing vehicle for a new musical genre that would come to be known as quote-unquote, heavy metal. The starting point was Steppenwolf's Born to Be Wild. To middle-class America, the underground alternative lifestyle was becoming a bit terrifying and more than a bit titillating. Television airbrushed the rough edges and came up with shows like Room 222 and, as we mentioned earlier, Rowan and Martin's Laughing. Other parts of the media tried to soften the blow of cultural degradation that seemed to be impending as well. Only music remained untarnished, mostly because it was one of the few forums left in which individuals could speak for themselves without answering to a series of committees and shareholders. It was still free, man, and profitable. Even the major labels, such as Columbia and RCA, were starting to grant some liberation to their artists. Steppenwolf encapsulated the freedom of riding a Harley, the freedom of speaking your mind, and the freedom of choosing your own damned lifestyle in a 3-minute song. Not television, not literature, not even the movies could do that. In the late 60s, that's just the way it was.
Yeah, darling, go make it happen.
Wow, this show, I mean, for me, I don't know, it was a very important show for me because at this point in time, I've got very distinct memories of this era, obviously.
Uh-huh.
But this next song I don't have a distinct memory of. I just learned to love it later on. It's by the Dells. The Dells recorded a song called Oh, What a Night in the mid to late 50s. Pretty good pop song, a really good pop song. And then later on in the 60s, they recorded a song called Stay in My Corner.
Oh,
that did decent on the R&B charts. But then in 1968, they re-recorded it. And I think that this is one of the most incredible vocal performances I've ever heard. Between the high singer and the baritone singer, this is just absolute glorious R&B. It's perfect. And I just hope you can, like, hang in there, especially at the end. It's unbelievable what they do. Thank you for listening on American Radio 90.3 WHPC. Here are the Dells performing Stay in My Corner, which I think is a major miracle in vocals. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Stay, darling.
Stay in my corner.
You'll make me oh so proud.
Stay, darling.
Stay in my corner.
To the world I'd cry
how I love you.
Honey, I love you. I really love you.
Stay.
Stay.
Please, please, please.
Stay, darling.
Love me, so darling, stay.
Comfort me, many things. love you.